Welcome back to the Success is My Religion podcast. We are partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement once again, this time for the HBCU Royal University Queens Second Edition. We will be interviewing the Queens for their next book that's coming out September 30th. I hope you enjoy these episodes. Next of the Queens, we have Faith Renee Spells. Faith brings you greetings from Cordova, South Carolina, an alumni of Voorhees College, class of 2003. She completed her Bachelor's of Science degree in Computer Science while serving as Miss Voorhees College 2002-2003. During her time at Voorhees, Faith also was involved with the following organizations: the Theta Epsilon chapter of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, Elizabeth Evelyn Wright Theater Guild, Science Club, SGA, Pre-Alumni Association, along with many others. Upon completing her bachelor's degree, she accepted the call into ministry in 2004, where she was licensed to preach the unadulterated truth of Jesus Christ. In addition, Faith has received two MBA degrees with a concentration in business administration and human resources, respectively, from Colorado Technical University. As a woman of God who is for the people of God, she is God's servant for such a time as this. Above all, her educational endeavors and community service accolades, her greatest joy is being able to minister to persons who is seeking Jesus in these last days and times. She is currently unemployed. She's employed. She is currently employed at Denmark Technical as the college registrar, an advocate for the arena of education. Faith is has over 16 years of experience in student advocacy, registration, admissions, enrollment management, and advising. In her spare time, Faith wears many hats also: a single mother, a passionate stylist, motivational speaker, poet, and inspiring author, and above all else, one who is chasing after God's own heart. Her favorite scripture is Hebrews 11:1. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not yet seen. Faith currently resides in Orangeburg, South Carolina, with her one-year-old son, Sir Grayson. Enjoy this podcast episode with Faith Renee Spells. Thanks. Welcome to another episode of the Success is My Religion podcast. I'm here with Faith Spells. She is a co-author of the book that's coming out, produced by the HBCU Experience Movement, the Royal University Queens Second Edition. If that's not right, I'm sure Ashley will tell me. But it is my pleasure to bring you on. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about you before we get into your HBCU background and all of that? Or you can talk about that in your introduction.
Okay. Sure. Thank you so much for having me, Michael. It's definitely an honor and a pleasure for me. Listeners, as Michael just stated, my name is Faith Renee Spells. And I am a proud single mother of a one-year-old. I did my background and my bachelor's degree at HBCU, excuse me. And I'm just honored to be a part of this project that Dr. Little has asked me to be a part of as it relates to being an HBCU queen at Voorhees College, located in Denmark, South Carolina.
How did you get to Voorhees?
I always say, Michael, honestly, that Voorhees chose me. Where I am located at in South Carolina, I'm from a small town called Cordova. That's in the country part. and more so in the city part that's closer to that area are two big HBCU colleges or universities, Claflin University as well as South Carolina State University. And they're basically neighbors. I always knew those two. And I always knew that I wanted to go to an HBCU because I did have a sister that went to South Carolina State. So I'm used to just the culture of HBCU and so forth. But it wasn't until one of my aunts from up north shared with me her experiences from Voorhees and said, you know, if you don't want to go to such a big school, then you can, you know, check at Voorhees. It is, you know, probably right up your alley and so forth. And when I went there, it felt like I was home, to be honest with you. And it felt like I could grow there and not get lost, if that makes sense. And I can be able to begin to form my own identity.
You had the your own identity thought from the beginning, because not a lot of young people have that type of thinking.
Yeah, I did, honestly, because I grew up, we were very, and we still are, I mean, but we grew up in a very religious home, and I did not honestly get exposed to a whole lot of stuff until I went to college. And is interesting enough, I think, honestly, if I would have went to a bigger school, I probably would have got lost in the shuffle. And that's just being honest, because a lot of things I just was exposed to once I joined the college life. And my identity, when I speak on that, it just really find out what do faith really want to do. And not so much of what people were telling me to major in, to, you know, do and so forth. So I wanted to... you know, form my own identity without too much of the pressures of outside voices, so to speak.
Definitely. So was an HBCU your first and only choice? Like, did your aunt just, that was it for you?
Yeah, well, you know, the crazy part is, honestly, I love art. I love artwork. I love drawing. I love painting. And I actually got accepted full ride to an art institute. And it was across the country. And but I didn't know if I wanted to do that full time as a major, so to speak. But my eye always and my heart, honestly, was always geared and inclined to the HBCUs.
Nice. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience at your HBCU? Sure. Coming in as a freshman, what does that look like?
So coming in as a freshman, if you remember the singer Faith Evans, that was that was my go-to person. So when, you know, coming upon the fresh as a freshman, you know, the upperclassmen, they would have nicknames for your freshmen and so forth, and that was my nickname, Faith Evans, you know. So I took it and I ran with it. Could not sing like her. Wasn't even trying to sing like her. But it gave me a boost of confidence. For one, not too many people had my name. So I was the only Faith on campus. And upon arriving, I actually was chosen to be Miss Freshman. So that gave me an outlet to kind of, in a sense, formulate and fine-tune my leadership skills and just being part of a particular brand as it relates to the college itself. I ended up majoring in computer science, which I absolutely love, and it gave me opportunity again being part of a STEM program to actually again interact with my peers and my classmates, my colleagues, my professors, and actually learn more about faith, but also learn more about the HBCU experience, because we were able to interact with other colleges and universities across the board. And being a part of like the student success program or the ambassadors for other classes that's coming into the college, it gave me an outlet. just to be a mentor and to also be inclined to make sure that everyone that I was mentoring had a successful experience, whether they stayed there for 1 year or all 4 years.
Nice. So what was your experience like becoming you? So you say you in freshman year, you was Miss Freshman, right?
Yes, I was Miss Freshman. It was surprising because, of course, you know, I'm the country girl. So I'm just like, oh, okay. All right.
did somebody push you or prod you to do that? Or did you have to apply? What's that process?
My peer mentor at the time, he was just like, I think you'd be a good Miss Freshman. I'm just like, oh, okay. So I actually did it because at the time, my group leader, he, you know, encouraged me to do it. And if he hadn't done that, honestly, I probably would not. Because I was kind of shy and kind of, you know, quiet. Of course, this is new to me, you know. and, of course, you know, learning new people, faces, and so forth. And honestly, Michael, that was just like the starting point because I was able to actually be hold other titles as it relates to, like, Miss Computer Science, Miss Student Success, and so forth. And when it came to the Ms. Voorhees component, one of my fraternity brothers from Phi Beta Sigma, he encouraged me, and he was actually a staff member at the college. And he was just like, Faith, I think you'll do good. So again, I went with his suggestion. And honestly, I did not think I was going to win because I was actually, I consider myself the underdog, just to be blunt, because I actually was in competition with two other young ladies who were very well known, very well popular, who their campaigns were banging. Like, it was, I'm just like, okay, look, I'm about to join y'all, just, you know, be your cheerleader, you know, type thing. And they were part of the same sorority. So I'm just like, yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and do my best. You know, one of them going to win. And that was my mentality. But, when the competition came and we had to do our presentations with talent and, you know, speaking engagements and so forth, leading up to that day for the pageant, I just gave it my best. And to this day, I'm still in shock, in a sense, that I won, because I already kind of, like, you know, prepped myself, like, yeah, I'm going to take this L, but I'm going to take it with grace. You know, I'll do my best. But it was such a beautiful shock to me. And then also it was a beautiful shock because being part of a sorority is one thing, but when the crown is passed from one queen to the next, it also highlights that sorority. So it has been a long time since my sorority was in the forefront for the title. So again, that was another, you know, legacy note, you know, in the books for the college and so forth. And for me, the journey was an amazing journey. And I will honestly say, Michael, that it gave me an opportunity to grow up. And it gave me an opportunity to understand the significance of being a part of a brand and being a part of a legacy, and also leaving a legacy, not so much of being a liability to the legacy, but being an asset to the legacy, meaning that, you know, I'm adding something to it so that the queens that come after me can look and say, okay, oh yeah, she did this, or oh yeah, she did that. So I was blessed to just be a part of the legacy, honestly.
Nice. So can you give us a little snippet of what's in your chapter?
Yes. So just a FYI on my social media handles. Of course, you can find me under Faith Renee Spells, but I usually go by Alopecia Beauty. And that handle actually is derived from part of the growth process of being a queen. And alopecia basically is a hair loss condition that affects over 7 million people worldwide. There's no cure. There's no real, to say, hardcore evidence or reason behind why it happens. And basically, like I say, it's a hair loss condition. Is many different stages or phases of it that affect people from infancy all the way up to, you know, that's their 100 plus years old. And when I say this, Michael, a lot of people be like, what you mean, you know, you were blessed with it? I've been blessed to have this condition for the last 36 years. Have I always been confident in it? Absolutely not. You know, as a Black woman, you know, we are very particular about our hair. You know what I'm saying? We are like, listen, it has to be right. And I didn't have that option. I was just like, okay, let me see what color. Let me see who. And I call on my girlfriends, you know, let me see what girlfriend I'm going to put on today. So being a queen actually, in a sense, as it relates to my chapter, kind of catapulted me into accepting faith. Because if you think about the idea or the concept of how you will classify or define a queen is always or should be always confident in herself. And once I won the title, one of the fears was, who's going to find out my secret? Because I was not... I wasn't sharing it with anyone. No one really knew, you know? So when it happened, that was one of the fears, like, am I really going to hold this title true? It wasn't until after I graduated from Voorhees, and this is, you know, noted in the chapter, that I actually became comfortable with shedding the layers, you know, if you will, and expressing, you know, hey, this is me. This is not a catfish. You know, this is me and this is me, you know, with or without hair. And I was so amazed, Michael, at the acceptance level and the unspoken situation that many, many women hide behind because they didn't feel like they had someone to identify with. And once I came out, it allowed me just to be more confident in oneself. And in the chapter, it basically talked about how I actually had to be reborn as a queen because now I had to unlearn so many different mechanisms as it relates to faith because now I'm accepting faith for who she really is.
Man, one of my favorite quotes is probably my ultimate favorite quote is, every adversity comes with it the seed of its equivalent or greater advantage. Napoleon Hill said that. Yeah. And I don't think as Black people we understand our adversity and the years of adversity and how we, when we say we stand on the shoulders of those who came before us, you know, we are products of their adversity, right? And their adversity was big, like they, right, you know, right. and if we are products of their big adversity, then we get to use their adversity because we now have advantages that they didn't have. We have freedoms that they didn't have, and now we all we need to do is take advantage of those advantages. I'm like it happened to us and it's not right, of course,
right?
You know, but we're not gonna change those people, you know. They gonna be who they are, and we wasting time trying to change other people instead of, hey, all right, we got access now. What are we gonna do with it? I don't care. I don't care anything about you. I would rather. I mean, this is just me, and this is me talking. I would rather know if somebody doesn't like me, instead of somebody faking it, you know, or me forcing somebody to fake it. You know, because then I can make a strategic move of whether I want to do business with you or whether I don't want to do business with you. Mm-hmm. Whether I want to talk to you, be associated with you, I can make that strategy and make a conscious decision myself. When you got people, right. I mean, they are part of the diversity and inclusion team, but they still think the same way. You know what I mean?
The same way.
Yes. Right. They ain't changing.
Right.
They just irritated that they gotta be on this team.
Right. Yeah, and that is so true because, you know, one of the things that I had to learn, Michael, as a woman, is that everybody's not gonna like everything.
Mm-hmm.
And no one is obligated to like you, your ways, or anything. It's nice if they do, but no one is obligated. And one of the things that I found myself was that I was stressed in relationships because I was thinking, when will I be able to tell this man this situation? And how will he be able to, you know, how will he respond? And I'm just like, you know what, let me cut all that out because that's on a whole nother level of stress that it's not necessary.
Yeah, we put it there ourselves. It's a self-inflicted obstacle.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. We are self-inflicting ourselves with unnecessary wounds that doesn't even need to exist because we're not true to ourselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, you know what? If I go ahead and lay all the cards on the table, then it's up to them.
Yep.
I can't be bad if it's a no.
You give it away. You give that. Yep. You give that that pressure away.
Exactly. And it was so much freedom. And that is one of the other components that I speaking on the chapter is just the freedom of being free of the self-inflicted stresses and the worries and the insecurities. And, you know, the self-confidence issues, you know, do I still have struggles here and there? Of course, you know, no one is perfect. But at the end of the day, whether I go outside with my bald head shining or if I go outside with a unit on that costs $400, I'm still good, you know.
And you get to choose exactly. What you do. And that's the most power that you can have is the power of choice.
Exactly. Most definitely.
And so, going off of that, that's good. I mean, that's valuable stuff right there because we all are battling something, internally because with those adversities that we inherit comes the traumas that we don't even understand, you know, those subliminal, traumas, even, with the running away from police and, you know, that is just a reaction that we've always had, you know, and that's instinctively inside of us because trauma is passed on through our DNA. You know, it's called epigenetics, you know, so what'd you say?
And people don't realize that and people don't realize the heaviness of things. And once I came to the realization that, you know, at that time, I didn't know if I was going to have children or not, just, you know, to be honest. But my concept was, I don't want to pass this on.
Mm.
You know?
The alopecia?
Not even the alopecia, just the heaviness of worry and doubt and insecurity, because just like you just spoke on the trauma, I don't want to pass any triggers on to my seat, you know. I don't want my child to deal with anything that I could have actually handled prior to him coming, you know.
And you didn't.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And now he is dealing with, you know, 30, 40 years of heaviness and wondering, why am I feeling like this? And people don't understand it can be passed on.
Yeah.
Now, as it relates to the alopecia, I'm not, and you know, the crazy thing is, Michael, when I had my son, prior to me having my son, I lost 3 children. And it was like back to back. It was like 18, 19, and 18 and 19. Mm. So I had lost one that was a single child, and I lost a set of twin boys. So when I found out that I was expecting my son Grayson, I was so fearful because I'm just like, oh my God, you know, is this a joke? This is so cruel because I just bare, you know, really two, you know, because they was just that, you know, mushy size and so forth. And I'm just like, I don't know if I want to deal with this. And one of the things that I said, I'm just like, you know what, God, at the end of the day, life is such a beautiful thing. And if you allow him to come to earth, it is my job to protect whatever I can protect from him. So I had to learn to deal with the fear, you know, of losing a child and growing a child at the same time, because I lost my twin boys in April. And I found out I was expecting with him in November. So it wasn't that much of a time frame for me to actually grieve and, you know, gather myself and so forth. But I never forgot the day that I came to the realization that if I don't stop certain things, it's not his fault. I have to end certain things so it will not be passed on to him. And I realized that, just like, you know, you speak of the traumas and the triggers and so forth, we as the adults have to take responsibility for those things.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, why will we hold on to something that's suffocating us?
Right.
Why will you hold the handle of the bag and pull it tighter if you can just rip the bag open and breathe easier? You know, it doesn't make good sense. Like my mom said, it doesn't make good sense for that to happen, you know.
All sins ain't but common, though.
Yeah, exactly. So I had to learn, you know, listen, girl, take that bag off and breathe. Okay, what can you handle? What can be fixed? You know, what can you be responsible for, you know? And I started handling those things. And I tell you no lie, honestly, I never thought I would be a single mom, but here I am. And one of the things that I realized is that we have so much power if our mindset is stable. Not saying that you won't have a bad day, a bad week, a bad month, a bad couple of months, even a bad year. But if our mindset is stable enough to say, okay, listen, shake that thing off, let's keep it moving. Okay, what can I handle right here? And that has been like my driving point, because at the end of the day, I don't want him to experience any type of trauma that I can protect him from.
Right, because we have to deal with, I'm a only child to a single mother too, so we have to deal with the traumas that you don't face. I can tell you that. Exactly. And I'm still dealing with it to this day. And my mother has no idea, and she is stuck in her ways so that she does not listen to me, and she ain't even that old, but I don't know what it is. I'm being vulnerable and transparent right now because I usually don't do this, but it does affect us. Like, and if I choose to not go the same route as you did, that's not a knock against you. I have to write my own story. And exactly. I think my mom is, she loves me and all that. Like, she'll tell me she loves me. But, like, if I choose something that, you know, and I'm like one of the perfect sons you could have. Anybody will tell you, they like, why is your mom tripping like this? Like, because you ain't did nothing. You ain't got no kids at 37 years old. You got you highly educated, you got a good career, you work with kids, you work with other people, you give back to the community, you do all of these different things, but the people that are close to you don't necessarily, you know, they just see you at a certain point and they keep you there. And it's hard because I try to take care of my mom because her parents died when she was 16 and 17 years old. So she didn't have parents growing up. I didn't have grandparents growing up, you know. you know, there's some things that we have to deal with that is unfortunate, but it happened, right? And I'm a basketball player, so I have to I have to make strategic moves. I play sports all like I'm trying to win the game. Right. And if something comes between me and winning the game, then I got to get rid of it, or I got to beat it.
By all means necessary.
So whether it's you, because I live in a small apartment with my mom, and we don't talk about it, but like I guess she think that's okay. But I do it. I mean, it helps. Because we split the bills and stuff, but I do it because like she ain't got nobody. Like it's all on me. She ain't got no husband like to help. Like, and I can go live my own life, but that's still another burden on me to and then she don't take care of herself physically.
Right.
So now
listen. And Mike, it's not to cut you off, but it's so important, because at the end of the day, I just had, well, I can't talk to my son like, you know, full force.
Yeah,
but,
like he's my age. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just, you know, I just told him, I said, Grayson, mommy have to do some things so that I can take care of me better. For myself as well as for you, you know, because at the end of the day, stuff like that matters.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that it's going to put you all the way to 101, but at least you are making progress to be better.
Right. And we see that.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know?
And we see that. And in the Black community, when we don't see a lot of success, if we see you, like, that's what's different in the other communities. Other communities, they have people that are striving for more. Like they not complaining about going to work. They building their own businesses and, you know, doing these different things over a long period of time. So in the Asian community, if your family had a restaurant the whole time, like you see them going to work, you see the work, and a lot of us like. My mom, she quit the corporate environment and she became a nanny, and you know it pays the bills or whatever, but she ain't got no retirement, no nothing, no insurance, no nothing. So, right. And then that's another burden on me.
A lot of people don't understand that, especially like when it deals with single parenting. And this is one of the things that I even speak, you know, with my son's father, is that single parenting in itself is hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
But it should not be the burden of the child, because we are the adults, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the child becomes burdened.
Yep.
Unfortunately, you know, whether the child is, you know, 5 years old, 6 years old, 36 years old, the child becomes burdened because we do not have these hardcore, heart-to-heart, come-to-Jesus talks.
Mm-hmm.
We just do what needs to be done, which is nothing wrong with it. But at the end of the day, is it effective enough to ensure that your child is not suffering in the end, you know?
Right. And it's unfortunate, but it's just survival mode. Like, you're just surviving.
Yeah, exactly.
And and it's hard. It's hard to get out of survival mode. Like, I work with students all the time, every single day, and they have the poverty mindset and not living in thinking for the future, right? What I do now is going to affect the future, you know, and trying to get them to understand that and to make not even just better choices, but just to actually not be afraid of looking at the future. That's all I want you to do is look at what your future is. Maybe I'm not explaining the habits, the highly successful habits that you need to create mm-hmm. to be, mm-hmm. you know, hit that long-term success or whatever. But it's crazy to me that we don't think in longer terms than even as adults. Like, I got people that I'm like, you know, if you keep on eating all this high sodium meat as your main diet, you probably ain't gonna be in a good place when you 50, 60, 70 years old.
But we don't want to listen. And when I say we, that's collectively, because we feel that we have time.
Yeah.
And I mean, we have been guilty of that, but yeah, we feel that we have time, and we feel that
it's not going to affect it. I was just about to say that. Oh, that's somebody else. That ain't going to be me. That ain't me.
Right. Oh, no.
And people,
well, why do you keep talking about that and all this other stuff? Like, I'm talking about it so you can get in your head.
Right. Because I went vegan with an ex-girlfriend of mine. I was studying it. Oh, not studying, but I kept on seeing like different videos about being vegan. And I was like, dang, my mom just went through something, you know what I mean? And maybe I need to look at this and try to change a little bit, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
I ain't all the way vegan. Like, I eat a little bit of meat, but, like, I don't care what y'all think anyway. So, me going vegan, the first thing my mom was like, so where are you going to get your protein from? I was like... plants because they have protein, you know, peanuts and stuff like that.
But
it was like condescending. Like, I'm trying to make a conscious change in my life, and mm-hmm. and you don't understand it because that's how you were raised, and you don't want to explore the possibility of it. And I've been. I've never been really sick, and I ain't been really sick in like the last 20 years. Maybe I can count on my one hand how many times I've been sick, right?
Right.
And that's just like a common cold, or, you know, maybe a flu bug or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
but my mom, on the other hand, you know, right. she battling all these different, and you the one telling me, and I work out on a regular basis. I'm going 12, like I was an athlete. I was a collegiate athlete, and mm-hmm. I'm a group fitness instructor. I've been a group fitness instructor for almost 9 years. I've been participating mm-hmm. in group fitness for 12 years. So, like, I've had the most consistent workout routine and almost everything than anybody that is even in my realm. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I don't know. People, like, irritate me when, like, I don't like to brag about what I do or anything. I just do it, you know, because I'm going after my goals. But when I say something, and I'm an introvert, so I don't say much. I used to not say much. Now people just get on my nerves enough that I got to tell them how it is.
You got to be vocal.
Yeah. I'm like, all right, I know this stuff. Like, I know fitness. I know how to be a collegiate athlete. I know how to compete. You know, all of this stuff. But the people look at me all crazy. Like, you only go work out 3 days a week. I'm going to 16 hours worth of classes in a week for years at a time in these past 12 years. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Consistently. You don't think I know a little bit of something of what you could do to tweak to help it, help what you're doing be more successful?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. That bothers me because I'm trying to help everybody. Yeah. Like,
but here's the thing. What I've learned is sometimes people don't hear what someone else is saying when they know that person because mm-hmm. they feel... like, they hear you, but they're like, okay, yeah, that's Michael Faye talking.
Yeah.
But let the doctor say,
you need to change this in 5 months or X, Y, and Z. Even do it for a little while, and then they're going to fall back off because, mm-hmm. again, their mindsets haven't changed. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And it has to be a total connection from your heart, hearing, understanding, comprehending to your mind.
Yeah.
And everything has to flow, you know? If not, then you're going to keep having setbacks.
Yep.
Everything else in between.
Right. And I'm cool with it now because I understand that now because like I tried to build a speaking business with two of my friends. I was like, y'all do two separate things. We all do three separate things. We all come together, build this company. We eat off of me. And it'll fund your ventures at the same time while we're building. And they both was like, no. And that was unbelievable to me. I was like, y'all know what Jay-Z and them did with Rockefeller? That's the same thing. What LeBron is doing with his crew, like that's the same thing. But they didn't wanna build. They didn't wanna learn the different things that they needed to learn in the building process. So I was like, hey, I'll just do it myself until I, you know, am totally ready and understand because the process of mastery and being independent, because I don't want to be dependent on anything or anyone. Mm-hmm. That process is long because you gotta start with working the cash register or, you know, sweeping the floors and stuff and go through that whole process before you can absolutely be independent. And
yeah.
I understand that, but they didn't want to do that. So, and then I read a book, one of Robert Greene's books, the 33 Strategies of War, or something like that. He was like, don't hire your friends. Just don't. Like that was the key point in the whole thing. I don't know if you ever read Robert Greene's books, but he gives like the analysis and how it affects you negatively, and then how it affects you positively. And he was just like, don't hire your friends. And I was like, after that, it was plain and clear.
Sometimes don't even hire people.
Your what, family members?
I ain't
doing that because I'm a reverse engineer, so I've been like telling people my goals for the longest time. So I look at my goal, I will tell you about it. It may be years to come before I hit that goal, but you gonna know about it in that process. And then I use what Tupac say, either you with me or against me. Like you can be with me. There's four ways you can be with me. You can be a coach, you can be a teammate, you can be a fan, or you can be a cheerleader. The only way you can be against me is if you hinder my progress. And if you do anything to hinder my progress, that gives me a sign that you are against me and I have to act accordingly. That's going in my book, though. that'll be in my book. So, Faith, what are you doing now? And what does your life look like? How has your HBCU life affected the way you live and how you live your life?
Well, actually, I am a... I'm actually the registrar at one of the technical colleges, HBCU. I started there probably right at 2 years after I graduated 2003.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, for the last, let's say, 16 plus years, I've been working at colleges in the capacity of admissions, records, registration, registrar's office and so forth. And one of the things that I had to be honest with myself about, I did venture out to other sectors of college life.
Mm-hmm.
But my heart always stood with the HBCU. One of the things that I realized is that a lot of times students don't have any true mentorship for someone to take the lead and say, you know, no, this is not the way you do X, Y, and Z. You know, let's look at this. So I took it upon myself that whenever I go, that will be one of the things that I always perform with my students, is to make sure that I am a leader, for one, but also make sure that they're able to gain some type of confidence, whereas once they need to make those life choices, that they have someone that they can look up to.
I'm in a peculiar spot with like life coaching and stuff. Like I don't like to tell people what to do, exactly what to do. But with younger people and like high school to college age people, I feel like I probably have to be like, do you trust me enough to help you make these decisions that's going to make you to put you in position for the success that you want before you even want it. And just what you saying that is making me think on like I have to be more direct with the students that I have. Like we only 5 weeks in. I work at a high school, and we only 5 weeks in. This is a new school that I'm at. And, like, the students trust me. They talk to me about almost everything now. But they're not getting the life coaching that I'm used to. They're not doing it themselves. Like, and I'm just going to be like, hey, I need you to do this because it's going to set you up for this, and this. And if you don't realize that or understand it, like now you won't, but later on you will. I don't need no thanks, but you will thank me later, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think I need to take it. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I agree, because let me tell you one thing I've learned. I'm only 40 years old, but I tell you no lie, Michael, I started out as an admin specialist or a glorified secretary, as one of my former coworkers told me, girl, you're just a glorified secretary. Okay, well, I will be that.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I've learned is that the students that I came across, to say in 2003, and I take it to 2010, it is such a comparison to the students that come through my office now. Because they have dealt with so many more life issues and adult-like issues than the students that I had prior to. And what I realized is that you can't pacify them.
Right,
You can't talk to them any type of way because they're quick with it. You're not going to disrespect them in any type of way. But you cannot pacify them, whereas it crippled them anymore.
Right.
And one of the things I've learned is that, like you just said, you have to be a little bit more direct. I have to be that too. And it's nothing wrong with it, but one of the key components to it is that you have to learn the student.
Yeah.
Because a candid conversation or a text message that may go to me to say, now, you know you're late with this project. I need you to go ahead and start playing and get it done.
Yeah.
Going to someone else with that same copy and pasting of the conversation, it may not go well because they may be going through something totally different.
Right.
And I'm not trying to coddle them, but sometimes you have to invest more time to learn them versus just putting them all in one category.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Because in a classroom setting, you facilitate the class.
But on an individual level, if you do tutoring for a group, that's a group. But 9 times out of 10, if the tutoring has to happen on an individual level, you will find out so much more because now they're inclined to trust you a little bit more because they don't have to feel subjected to, I don't want everybody to know my business.
Right.
I don't want everybody to know my shortcomings. I don't want everybody to know that I really do need a calculator versus pen and paper as a count. I don't want everybody to know that, yeah, I'm a top athlete, but I don't do well in this class. And I feel insecure. And so the investing of time is so essential because it allows you to connect with that student on a whole other level. And in hindsight, it gives that student that extra cushion to trust you more. So now they have that trust component and you have their trust and it's interchangeable because now you know and you start picking up on things because now you're forming more so of a relationship, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Versus just having a rapport. And so now you're picking up on, wait, why are you so quiet? That's not her. She's always, you know, answering or whatever. Let me digest and see what's going on after class. And once you learn your students, you are more apt to assist them a little bit better.
Yeah. And I'm 37, so I've been in the education space for some time now, and that's where I'm come to. Like, I just the stuff that I really need to say to them, especially the black and brown students, it's hard to say in the spaces that we're in because of, for lack of better words, white people.
Yeah.
They just don't understand. They don't understand where I'm coming from. Because, and this is what I boil it down to, is it's sympathy. They have sympathy and I have empathy. I sympathize with the students. I understand that they may come from a bad spot or whatever, but we still have to work through that. And they still have to work through that, you know? And they still have to position themselves. It's going to be hard work, and it's going to be even harder depending on where you come from. And I think, especially at my last school, I just changed to a different school. At the last school, like, I couldn't say really anything because everybody thought they knew what was best for everybody. I was like, dude, y'all really don't understand what they about to walk into after they leave this environment. Everybody I talked to, I was like, you know, they about to go to top schools, right? And those are PWIs. And they were like, oh, they'll be good. They'll find their own, you know, little group or whatever. I'm like, that's not the same as a predominantly minority school that the environment that they're in, that they were in like all of their lives. Then they go to this PWI and they have to deal with the microaggressions of white girls or white boys like that. That's something different. I grew up in that stuff, so now it's like I understand it. So how do we keep them to be unique inside of those environments and achieving at a high level inside of those environments? Because we already know those students are going to bring the innovations to the different fields. And that's probably why we need to send more students to HBCUs because they go in and they come out with so much confidence.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, honestly, it has to be a collective effort, and this is just me speaking, because I think, well, not think, I know it has to start in high school.
Mm-hmm.
It has to start with the community. We have lost our sense of community in a lot of areas. those leaders and titles that used to have respect back in our days no longer have the level of respect anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because we fail to realize that people that hold titles are still human.
Mm-hmm.
And we as a community sometimes put them on a pedestal. So when they...
we get disappointed.
Right. So, and we don't believe anymore. And I'm not talking about so much of the church. I'm talking about whether it's a lawyer, whether it's a basketball coach, anyone that we have respect for. So it has to take a collective effort from middle school to high school, because middle school is a grooming ground for high school so that they can achieve those scholastic scholarships and so forth and move forward to college.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to take a collaborative effort from middle school, high school, as well as the community, because if the single parent home doesn't see a father in the picture, they may not know how to respect a male figure.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. What are your thoughts on it?
I agree. I mean, and there's I have come to another understanding is that we need to, well, hello, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. We need to look at the individual, and we need to get that individual on the growth mindset. And what you said earlier, it's all about the mindset. If that individual doesn't want to grow, then I can't force them to grow. So I have to at least move on to somebody else that is open to that opportunity to grow and learn from whatever. So it is a community thing that we have to, but if that doesn't happen, and if it takes too long for that to happen, we have to go straight to the individual, straight to the parent. And that's my mission, is to go straight to the individual, straight to the parent, and be like, if y'all, I know it's hard. If y'all are willing to start doing some little things over a period of time, you will be successful and you will be at a different place than what you are now. But just letting it happen and doing the same thing over and over and over again, that's the definition of insanity. And that's what society has put us in based off of the adversity that we have been, the traumas that have been done to us. And it's just a culmination, but it's our responsibility. And ultimately, like I said, those adversities are big. You know, if we choose to take those on and take those on head on, it becomes our greatest advantage. And we those people at the bottom are going to be able to innovate the whole world if we choose to work our way out of whatever we are stuck in and stuff. So that's just my understanding, and success is the number one component of that. I think our sights should be on a healthy success, not just monetarily successful. Yeah. Because a lot of people are just money. Like, I got money now, but you're not a good person.
Right. Like, your attitude is not up to par, ma'am or sir. And I'm so glad you said that, because success and wealth is always, we sometimes associate that with, or even the word prosperity, with money. No, all of those are just, first of all, yes, money is a component. It's a blessing. We thank God for money. At the end of the day, if you do not have good strategies or good insight and knowledge of how to utilize your money,
mm-hmm.
you will always incur debt.
Yeah.
You will always be a liability to yourself and to your household and to your legacy, because you do not know how to, as my grandmother would say, keep a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
The money burn the hole in your pocket, you know. And that is one of the things that we have to learn, that it's not all about money. It's about a total healthy perception of oneself. Yeah. You know, your spirit is good. Your conversation.
Your mental health. You care for other people. You're not gonna talk about people all the time and, you know, have mm-hmm. this negativity like that. Right. That's success. Like, everybody that come around me is winners. We win around, like, whoever is on my team, we win. I don't care what nobody say. But if you come around me, come to my group fitness classes, you are in my class at the school and stuff like that, you're going to come out with a different mindset. That's the aura that I bring, and I know it. And we got 3 minutes, so it took us a while to get into it, but, like, this conversation is so good. But I want to make sure I get let you plug the book and give us some final encouraging thoughts as we get off of here.
Oh yeah, most definitely. So, you know, of course, the book will be released on Thursday, September the 30th. It is a project with myself and some other HBCU queens that has contributed to what it means to be an HBCU queen and how it helped them to achieve where they're at in their lives at this current stage. And one of the things that I want to leave with the listeners is basically be true to yourself, you know. Be true to yourself, because at the end of the day, if you're not true to yourself, the person that you are looking at in the mirror every day is not receiving your best that you can give. Because at the end of the day, if you don't take care of yourself, nobody else will. And nobody else will take care of you like you should take care of you. Because at the end of the day, you know you. And ultimately, for any young lady who's dealing with self-esteem, insecurities, or confidence, I just want to encourage that your story matter. Whether you're dealing with alopecia or whether you're dealing with any type of disability, whether it's physical or even if it's invisible, your story and your voice matter. Do not dim your light. Do not dim anything that makes you shine just because it makes you feel different. Your difference can make a difference.
Ooh, leave them with it. I appreciate it. Thank you for your insights. Thank you for coming on the podcast. It has been a pleasure. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Keep
you
raising
too,
your son.
Michael.
Yeah.
Yes, I will. Yes.
All right. I'll let you know when this comes out, and have a good rest of your weekend. Awesome.
All right, you too, Michael. Be blessed.
All right, have a good one.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Success is My Religion podcast. Go get the book. We are partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement for the HBCU Royal University Queen's Second Edition. It's coming out September 30th. Go get it.